on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield IMG College, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
It's another edition of YokeCast, and this week we preview the South Dakota-North Dakota State football matchup. Jamie Oyen tells us all about the compliance office, and we start this week with South Dakota Athletic Director David Herbster.
David, welcome back from Hawaii. I know the men's team went 3-0, so obviously it was good, but your thoughts on the little getaway to Honolulu?
Aloha. I learned aloha and mahala, which is thank you. You know what? It was good. Seeing them out there, it was their first three games of the year, and seeing three very different teams that they had to face in Pacific, Hawaii, and Florida A&M. And the best part about that is we won all three. That part was big for this group. Of course, your picks. We're picked second in the league, but we don't really know how everybody was going to respond. It was great to see Tyler Hagedorn back in action, and even seeing some of the new players actually receive and get some pretty good time. Hunter Goodrick, Tyler Chisholm, Cruz, even Simeon Jovac got in the action a little bit. So, I mean, there were some times we had a lot of young faces out on the court as well, and we still came away with three wins. Great from a team bonding experience as well. I mean, you're around each other that often for that amount of time. It sounds like it's all fun and games, but which I know there's no sympathy for me or this group right now. I understand that, but I think they matured and grew quite a bit while they were out there, and so ideally that's you'd like to think that bodes well for the season.
Well, while you were kicked out, I'm sure you had your feet kicked up on a beach somewhere and getting ready to watch the Coyote men last Friday, the volleyball team won the Summit League regular season title outright. We knew they had clinched a share going into that, but they won it outright with two games to go in the regular season. I know this program has been building, but this is just such a great accomplishment for the program and where we want to see it continue to grow.
It really is. With volleyball, it's one of those things we didn't talk a lot about the week or two leading up to it because, mathematically, you start looking at how long before we have to clinch. And I think the big one we really started looking at is when we beat Denver here. And then all of a sudden now they have three losses, and when can we really truly clinch? I think in our world, right, you don't really talk about the win streak. You don't talk about championships during the season. You don't talk about those things until they actually happen. And what an extraordinary year this team has put together between the coaching staff, the young ladies responding. Clinching at home, I think, was beautiful. It really was. And what a reward for the 1,700-plus people that showed up for that match. That really was a great – it's a great senior night, certainly for those seniors, but for our fans as well to be able to clinch on the home court. Now, again, we still go off this week, and we've got Western Illinois and Fort Wayne, which, again, any Summit League match is a tough match. And so, but with the eyes on the Summit League tournament, and the goal is of winning that one. But it's as special as anything, and maybe the big thank you, the big mahala to everybody, was when we clinched at home, we also clinched hosting the 2020 Summit League Volleyball Championships here in Vermilion. And the good next year, we'll actually have two home volleyball tournaments instead of one. And so now our fans going to be, you've got three tournaments over the course of the year, and you can count on all three.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And as you talk about the fans and a thank you to them, the volleyball attendance is in the top 50 in the country in terms of average attendance. What does that say about the program right now and just this fan base when we've seen the fans, the tickets, and the numbers continue to grow for volleyball?
Over the last 3 years, it's always continued to move upward, and certainly that's the play of the team. I think this past year, I give Mike West and his team, Jaron Duffy and Kelsey, a lot of credit for putting together the information, putting together the marketing plan, and executing it. Now, again, you can be the best marketer in the world, and if you don't have a good product, you're going to look like an idiot, right? But we've got an outstanding product, and we've got some really good marketing people, and you put those two things together, and I think that's why, you know, you've seen the attendance shoot up. It doesn't hurt when you've only lost one match all year. So that success is definitely yours. So you are extremely relevant, and frankly, it's great volleyball. And, and having some South Dakota flavor on the team as well, that only helps. It only helps the relevance of the sport itself. And this past year, I think people have caught the bug a little bit this year with, you know, certainly when we played Iowa and beat Iowa here. After the football game, you had a lot of people get exposed to it that had not been exposed to volleyball before. And I've seen more and more of that this year of people who had not watched or come to a volleyball match before. Now they start to come. Helps when you win, but it helps when you play like we do. And now all of a sudden you throw all of that together and you've got a top 50 attendance in the country, and certainly lead the Summit League in attendance. And I see us looking at, even ahead to next year, is finding different ways to build on that.
You know, you talk about winning helps, and this team has won a lot. They've won 22 consecutive matches, which is tied for the second longest in the nation with Western Kentucky, one behind Colorado State, who's won 23 straight matches. Do you think people realize the challenges that really are involved and go into accomplishing 22 consecutive wins?
Only if they've been on a team that's had a streak. There's streaks that go the other way, but to win 22 in a row, it's very difficult to do. Frankly, to win 10 in a row can be tough, and in this league, sometimes winning 5 in a row is really, really difficult. So 22 in a row, that's an unbelievable amount of not only certainly ability, but focus, determination, dedication, and you have to do all of that without talking about the streak. It's one match at a time. I think all of our coaches do an excellent job of preaching it's one match at a time. I've heard in interviews in the past, well, you got, okay, you end this, you know, we're 4 games from the end of the year, yet you're talking about playing South Dakota State in the last home game. I'm only worried about the next game in front of us. You know, everything else will fall out or will play out as it plays out. And I think our entire staff does a great job of having the teams and their players just focus on the next game. So you can't focus on the streak. You have to focus on just the next opponent. There's enough people that are going to talk about the streak. The team doesn't need to do that because they always know it's there. They're not. Everybody has a heartbeat, and they get it. But they've been able to play with a little bit of that pressure on their back. And we found with these ladies that they're more than willing to accept that. But 22 in a row, boy, that's really, really tough.
No doubt, and the more you win, the more you attract the future generations and future of your sport. And, you know, we had signing day this week for really everything outside of football, I think, and saw some different kids brought in, and Coyote family continues to grow. I'm sure you don't have a whole lot of role when it comes to signing day and what these coaches are bringing in, but I know you always appreciate seeing the Coyote family continuing to grow.
Absolutely. There's so much pomp and circumstance, again, around it. Going through that process myself, signing day wasn't what it is now. I mean, you had your piece of paper, the coaches mailed it to you. You had to mail it back on signing day, and then you could send it back in, and that was really about it. I signed the papers in my living room. There wasn't the big, you know, reveals and social media photos and all that kind of stuff back then. It was just kind of a, but I'm old, yeah, too, right? And so things change, David. I get that. But no, on those, it's, you know, I sign all the scholarship papers. I sign all the national letters of intent. So it's, you see all the names. You get to know, you know, where they're from, who they are. Many of them I've met on their recruiting visits. And so it's real rewarding to see them and to know how excited they are once they finally sign. There's almost a couple different levels here to this, because now at first they talk about who they've received official offers from, right, during the recruiting process. And then they start talking about who I verbally committed to. And then it comes to the signing date, and then you got that next level. So there's, you know, prior to getting to this date right here, you know, some of these kids from a social media perspective or from a media perspective have already had one or two other episodes of, hey, this is who offered me, or this is where I visited, or this is where I've committed to. And then you get to this point. But this is the part that wraps it all up, and it's when our family starts to grow.
Yep, and we'll continue to see that. David, great stuff. Hope you get caught up from some sleep from that long travel to Hawaii, but I'm sure you enjoyed it. And men's team 3-0, they get a home opener this week, women's home opener this week, so it'll be fun to see basketball back at home. Thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate it.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
Jamie Oyen is the Associate AD for Compliance and Senior Enrollment Administrator at the University of South Dakota. This week, I had a chance to catch up with her and talk to her about her role in helping student-athletes get an extra year, the role in signing day, and more.
Jamie, this week it was signing day for a lot of sports, and obviously an exciting time for a lot of different sports. But as compliance, what's your role in signing day?
This is game day for compliance. This is what we prepare a few weeks in advance for, getting all the paperwork in, proper things in order for our athletes to be issued a national letter of intent. And then from there, it's a wait and see. And so we're in early on signing day. I started having them come in at 7 a.m. this morning. So I'm usually in early because with different time zones, they can come in at different times. If we have different countries, they can come in when it's 7 a.m. on the 13th for their location. That's when they can sign. So I have to be ready to process when those items come in.
You've seen signing day a few times in your time, in your different roles and whatnot. How has it changed over the years?
It used to be that coaches all huddled around the fax machine waiting. Football especially, but their signing period's coming up here in a few weeks. But you don't sit around the fax machine anymore. It's all scanned copies and or electronic signatures, things like that. So it's gotten a lot better, but there's still the anticipation, the excitement. You're welcoming new people to the family, and so it's a big day.
Obviously, coaches work awful hard to build a recruiting class, and they're excited usually about the kids that they're bringing in for obvious reasons. They can't talk about those kids until that letter comes into your office. Is it start to be kind of a buildup of, I don't know if anticipation is the right word, but nervousness out of your office to make sure that nobody's talking about anything until that paper comes in signed?
Yeah, unfortunately with social media, I have to monitor a whole nother monster. And so just making sure there's no public comments before commitment. And then once we do have that signed paper, I'm the first one to let people know that it's okay, that they can talk about them. And they're very excited for that opportunity to finally be able to talk about those individuals.
You know, you mentioned social media, and obviously that's a completely different animal. But now you've got everybody has access to social media. So you're monitoring, I'm sure, some of the student-athletes and especially coaches on this stuff. What about fans and their communication with potential student-athletes and some of that? Is that ever a concern?
We watch it. Yeah, we watch for comments, especially kids that are interested. They've expressed interest in the programs, but haven't made any type of a commitment. We watch those comments, and if things get what we would consider questionable, we have a conversation.
You talked about football, too. Obviously, they have an early signing period now, and this is, I think, year three of the early signing period. How has that changed football signing days, I guess, if you have one now in December versus all of it being in February?
It makes February a lot less stressful, I'll tell you that. You're not having, you know, 30-plus coming in February, which is really nice. Also takes some of the stress off of those coaches and the importance of January recruiting. It used to be, you know, a mad dash to get commits and get paperwork processed and everything to sign in February. And now they kind of ease into it, and we still have a little bit of a rush before the December signing period, but it's a lot, I think, less stressful. I think it's better for the prospects because they are not having to wait so long to make that commitment, because most of their high school seasons end in November, and they want to make their commitment and not have to think about it over the holidays. So I think it's been a good benefit to have it in December and let those kids be done with the recruiting process and complete their commitment.
Does your role change based on the sport, or is it all pretty much the same process?
It's all pretty much the same process. It's a lot of making sure we have the right information on our kids and getting everything out to them. Jessica Wingen is a great help in getting our national letter of intent and our scholarship tenders processed, and then we get them out to the kids in anticipation of the big day.
When it comes to compliance, I'm sure there's a lot of things that a lot of people don't understand that goes into it. I mean, you're kind of the gatekeeper between USD and its athletics department and the NCAA to try to avoid violations and make sure we're following all the rules and protocol and whatnot. What's your role when it comes to making sure that the University of South Dakota is compliant?
I have to make sure, obviously, that we follow institutional controls. So all the way up to President Gestring, I have to make sure that our university is doing what we need to do. I get questions from across campus, and I think our campus does a fantastic job of asking questions, so they do the right thing. So I think if the tone has been set that ask before you act, which has kind of been our mantra. But it's my job to make sure that if there's something happening that shouldn't be, that I ask questions and try to figure it out, and if we have an issue, we self-report our violations.
When you talk about self-reporting a violation, obviously you never want to do that, but things happen and you self-report. What's your goal when you're reporting violations to the NCAA?
I think it's to swiftly figure out what happened, do an investigation to see where the breakdown happened and what exactly happened, and then from there self-report as quickly as possible. And we look at research for precedent for previous cases from other schools that had a similar violation so that we can determine what the penalty will be, so that hopefully what we assess as our own penalty ends up being the NCAA comes back and says no further penalty, you've done what precedent asks. So that's our goal.
Does that usually follow a pretty, I mean, every case is different and has its own set of circumstances, but do you find that the precedent that's set is oftentimes followed?
Yeah, there's some really good standards that are set in terms of if you go over hours and you have to do a 2-for-1 penalty, it's pretty easy. Okay, you went over by 1 hour in the week, now you got to sit out 2 the next week. So they are pretty consistent, but we do have the discretion to give ourselves more of a penalty if it's kind of a learning opportunity. And set the tone that way as well. So, and the NCAA has yet to come back with additional penalties beyond what we've prescribed for things that we have reported over the last few years.
So in a way, it's a different kind of mother role for you, because now you have to make sure that whether it's a coach or an athlete or somebody in administration or whoever follows through with whatever you've submitted to the NCAA, right? And I'm sure at times you got to just nudge them along a little bit.
Absolutely. And there's always that lovely paper trail. So we like to make sure that we document that we've done what we said we needed to do. So if we do get asked, we can cover and show that we've done what we needed to do.
Sometimes there's a lot of work to get student athletes eligible, whether it's from transferring or maybe it's a medical issue trying to get a sixth year of eligibility or for whatever. I know that one that came to mind for me was Nicole Seekamp, an athlete who dealt with some stuff because of being from Australia, and she got another year of eligibility. I know a lot of that stuff takes a lot of work. And I'm sure for you, it's a lot of work just to make sure you have a case before you even start to put it together.
Absolutely. It's a lot of research, a lot of working with the individual student athlete to get their story, to get their documentation, and you're really building a case almost like you do in the legal system. And so you're going back to the NCAA and saying, what documentation do I need to provide, and asking questions so that you do give them up front everything that you think that they're going to need in order to make a decision and give you the outcome you're looking for. In Nicole's case, we had been digging for quite a while to pull together the information that we needed, and thankfully we built a great case and got the outcome we wanted for her.
You know, obviously you want to make sure that you have a case before you even dive into all of this stuff because of the amount of work that goes into it, but what goes into making that case to grant that extra year of eligibility?
Again, it goes back to, I think, what the NCAA asks for in the different types of waivers. And so if they are asking for certain documents and things, you're really reaching out to people. If it's an initial eligibility waiver, you're talking to high school principals and guidance counselors and working with transcripts very closely, and really just looking at every aspect of the waiver and seeing how you can build that case. And you get emotional, I think, at times, because you're right, you put a lot of hours into it. And so with the time put into it and just getting to know the student athletes through the process, it's good to get the outcome. You feel an emotional connection and you want to see that student athlete see their career through here.
when it comes to student athletes and the years that they can be an athlete, what's the standard for the NCAA on completing your years of eligibility?
You have 5-year clock in order to use 4 years of eligibility. And obviously you've got some, you know, redshirt opportunities, a medical redshirt, those types of things that can put a gap in that clock. But if we get to that point, there's an option for a 6th-year extension as well if it's needed.
When you talk about coaches or athletes or your staff being compliant with the NCAA, is there protocol that USD follows trying to stay ahead of things and work with the coaches to make sure that they're educated on different things?
Absolutely. We do rules education with our coaches. We try to make it sport specific, so they're not sitting in on sessions where this applies only to one sport and not my sport. They tend to tune out at that point. So we try to make it very sport specific and informative. The NCAA puts out interpretations and educational columns and things all the time that we try to put in our coaches' hands the minute we get them, so that they're as informed as we are. The legislative process is always a moving clock, because you have proposals that come out and we want our coaches to know about those proposals, and then when they become potential legislation, we want their feedback and know how that will impact them as a coach and with their program before votes come in from the NCAA in January. And then once things become legislation or legislation changes, then we meet with them and go proposal by proposal and say, this is how it's going to impact your sport and these are the changes that are coming.
We probably can't fully educate everyone on compliance and everything that goes into it, but what do you wish maybe fans knew about compliance and things that your office does that are important that they should know as they interact or do whatever they do, whatever fans do?
I think the biggest thing is that we're all here to make sure that we protect the eligibility of the student athlete and protect the university. And so if there's ever a point where they wonder if what they're doing is right or wrong, usually that internal piece tells us whether or not what we're doing is right or wrong. But we always ask people to ask us, because we'd rather give you a way to go about what they want to do rather than just assuming they can do it, because we'd hate for an oops and then cost somebody their eligibility. So it's complex. The NCAA rules are not easy. Some contradict each other. That's my job to figure out which ones do and which ones don't. And it's ever evolving. They're trying to modernize rules to work with technology and all kinds of things. And so I think just fans understanding that it's a moving target and we're always trying to do everything we can to protect the student athlete.
Let's say somebody does have a question or a concern. What's the best way to reach out and ask their question?
They can certainly email me. They can call me. All my information's at goyotes.com. They can stop me at an event. I'm happy to answer questions and help them with concerns.
Jamie, thanks for the time. Great stuff, as always. And keep the university compliant. Keep doing it. Because I know, as you said, it's a complex set of rules, and there's a lot that goes into it. So keep up the great work, and thanks for the time.
Thank you.
South Dakota hits the road for the final time this season as the Coyotes head to Fargo to take on the top-ranked and unbeaten North Dakota State Bison. To give us a look at North Dakota State, we bring in the voice of the Bison, Jeff Culhane. Jeff, it's been another fantastic year for North Dakota State. It seems like it doesn't matter what coach they throw out there or new players, the thing just keeps rolling down the tracks.
John, great to be back on with you here on the podcast. And I tell you, it's been a pretty impressive season. And, you know, I hope our fan base does not take it for granted. Unfortunately, I think some of them do. But Matt Entz has done an amazing job. These new coaches have been great. And I think it speaks to, once again, just the culture of this football program and how they go about their business day in and day out. And, you know, Matt Entz, with a win last weekend, became the most successful first-year head coach in NDSU and Valley football history, winning his first 10 games. So impressive stuff, and still some tough games out there, and it starts this weekend with the Coyotes.
Well, obviously, a lot of what North Dakota State has been talked about for this year starts with Trey Lance, just a phenomenal young guy at quarterback that they have, and excited, I'm sure, to have him for a few years yet. What does Trey Lance, when you watch this guy, I mean, he brings about everything to the table, doesn't he?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how blessed and lucky this place has been at the quarterback spot. You know, from Brock Jensen to Carson Wentz to Easton Stick, and now you got a guy like Trey Lance as a redshirt freshman, John, who is being talked about already as someone that's going to challenge those three, and he's already challenging a lot of the single season records. He's basically broken every freshman record for the most part here at NDSU. The first freshman quarterback to start an opener in NDSU history. And, you know, his numbers speak for themselves. He leads the nation in pass efficiency and completion percentage. 21 touchdowns to still, and I'm going to knock on wood when I say this, zero interceptions for Lance. He's one of three quarterbacks in the entire NCAA that has not thrown a pick yet this season. And he can run the football. He's 6'3", 225. He's tough. He's physical. He's run the football for 9 touchdowns this year. And I think he just has done a really good job of not forcing the issue and playing like a veteran. And he's taking what the defense has given him, and he's starting now to extend plays in a manner where he's not forcing the issue. So, you know, new play caller this year in Tyler Roll. Randy Hedberg, our passing game coordinator and associate head coach, needs a lot of credit as well. He has really molded Trey, and Trey had a chance to learn under Easton Stick last year all season long, and that's obviously a big helper as well. So he has been phenomenal and certainly off to a tremendous start in his redshirt freshman year.
Well, and obviously he's a part of it, but it helps take a little pressure off the quarterback when the run game is as good as what North Dakota State has been known for, it seems like, and averaging right now just under 300 yards a game, and I believe it's somewhere around 6 to 7 yards per carry. It's pretty incredible what the run game continues to be at North Dakota State.
Well, I think the thing that you know, as long as I'm here, I'll never question about NDSU is the offensive line. And they just, the coaching staff and the strength staff just have a really, really good feel, John, about what types of players they want to bring in to play up front offensively for the Bison. And they are, you know, some of them are walk-ons. Some of them are, you know, obviously scholarship kids, but they all kind of come from the same mold. They're tough kids that work hard, that want to play for the Bison and be a part of the culture of what the offensive line at NDSU has been for a long, long time. And you got Twin Cities kids, you got North Dakota Farm kids. It's an interesting mix of young players for the Bison. As I know, the Coyotes are called the Hippos up front. NDSU has termed their O-line the Rams, and that's been their label for a long, long time. So it starts there. And then you've got a strong rotation of different body running backs. I think similarly to what the Coyotes have at wide receiver, a lot of different bodied receivers that make a lot of plays in different areas in the passing game. And so, you know, I think these guys have different skill sets, and they just kind of keep coming at you. And then you factor in the quarterback into the conversation, and it makes life even more difficult for opposing defenses.
How about defensively for the Bison? Obviously, Jabril Cox is a name that gets a lot of recognition for North Dakota State, but this defense continues to be tremendous. They've allowed in a single game, the most points they've allowed is 22 points, and that was on the road at Delaware. This defense, again, it's just another North Dakota State defense that continues to be solid.
Yeah, you know, you have a head coach that is that's one of the things that's continued here is from Craig Bohl to Chris Kleiman to Matt Entz. We've had defensive-minded head coaches this decade at NDSU. And Matt Entz, who was a tremendous coordinator, was the FCS coordinator of the year last year from Football Scoop on the defensive side. He knows what he wants to have over there, and they have done a really good job of finding ways to get their best 11 players on the field. You know, Jabril Cox speaks for himself. James Hendricks is one of the senior leaders on this team. The secondary has been, I think, more and more opportunistic as the season has worn along. And we can't forget to mention Derek Tuska. You know, we're going to see two of the best defensive ends in the FCS this weekend on the same field in Darren Greenfield and Derek Tuska, both Buchanan Award watch list guys, and they are tremendous players. I know they're even better people away from the field, and Tuska is certainly a guy that anchors that defensive line that comes at you in waves with, at times, 8 and 9 players in a game that get reps up front for NDSU.
Jeff, when you sit there and you get to see this team week in and week out, and they just continue to find ways to win or dominate football games, more dominating than finding ways to win, but how much fun has it been for you to just to sit back and watch this program sustain success the way that it has?
Well, it's unlike anything I've ever been around. And, you know, I hate to use coach speak, but it's the best culture program I've ever seen. I mean, they have been just at another level. And I've been fortunate enough to be around Nebraska football, West Virginia football, you know, and the programs within those universities, and been able to be around, you know, the Big Ten, the Big 12, in years past. And it's just, I think the thing that I've taken away, John, is, and there's no simple answer to this, but when you have players that hold themselves accountable to a high level and don't care who gets the credit, you get a really good setup with the team. And I think that's what has happened here, is that not only do you have great recruiting and really good talent, but the culture of this place is the players hold themselves accountable, and the coaches certainly do that as well. But when you have coaches on the field in all three phases that are, you know, not only playing for their teammates, but also playing for the players that were here before, and the success that's been has already been at NDSU football, you've got a really successful combination. And so I think that I've learned from these guys about, hey, what does it take to be consistently great? And you just, it's hard to do it. You know, people here, I think, again, I think our fans get spoiled. I think they feel like this is just something that's supposed to happen, and it doesn't. And so the streaks, all the wins, all of that, I think it comes back to the fact that these young men really hold themselves to a high standard and hold themselves very accountable. And that's been one of the biggest takeaways for me over the last 4 years.
Jeff, I know that with North Dakota State and obviously the coaches that have left and gone on to some bigger programs, I know you were happy for Chris Klieman getting the job at Kansas State. When you look at it, Craig Bohl went to Wyoming. That's a tough place to win football games, but he's had his success there. Now, Chris Klieman, instant success at Kansas State. Is the fan base understanding what they had to lead their football program?
Well, I think some people do. I think others don't. You know, as we talked about before, I think people show up in tailgate and, you know, they have fun. And I'm not saying that Bison fans don't get it. Bison fans are some of the smartest football fans in the country, and they're some of the most passionate fans in the country. But there's a vocal minority out there for sure that think we should move, NDSU should move to the FBS, and that, you know, maybe this isn't whatever you want to call it. If it's not the level of football the Bison should be at, I think people just, you know, moving from Division II to Division I and then FCS to FBS is apples and oranges. And there's so much more that goes into the jump to FBS to be successful and to have the amount of success that you think a program is capable of having. So it's certainly a conversation on social media, I think, and I think it's a very vocal minority, much like everything else is, John, on social media. But, I do think fans certainly understand what's happening, but there's no doubt. I think our fan base has, you know, have we been spoiled? I think the answer is yes. And hopefully, and they do really ramp it up here down the stretch, we'll see this crowd get rowdy and raucous at home like they have in the playoffs in the past 8-9 seasons.
Well, they definitely get rowdy at home. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, one thing about being a guy who's been on the sidelines for a few games, the male cheerleaders with those yell tubes are some of the loudest things I've ever heard in my life, I'm telling you.
They get it going, don't they? They get fired up down there.
Jeff, touch on basketball right quick. I know it's a small sample size, 2-1 start to the season for North Dakota State. The men, of course, picked as the favorite in the Summit League.
Yeah, I think they, they've had some good learning experiences here early in the year. Cal Poly was a win, but by no means did the Bison play their best brand. And so I think it's a good thing for David Richmond early in the season. You know, they go down this weekend to Corpus Christi, Texas for three games. And I think they could go down there and have a lot of success. So, I think they do have done a really, really good job. There's an understanding of what it takes now to be successful and to win a Summit League championship. And it's going to be tough this year, man. I'll tell you, USD is really good. Oral Roberts is really talented. And I know SDSU lost a lot, but they still have really good players, and somebody still has to beat them in Sioux Falls in front of 10,000 fans. So it is, I think it's going to be a tremendous men's basketball season in the Summit League. There are some really good players and really good teams, and I think NDSU definitely is one of them.
I look forward to it. Jeff, last thing before I let you run, it's the most important, perhaps, for Coyote fans making the trip to Fargo, whether it's Friday night or Saturday before the game. Where are some of Jeff Colhane's favorites to grab a bite to eat?
Oh, man, yeah. I've the last 5 months, I've not been able to really get out and do that, unfortunately, John. But fortunately, because my wife and I had our first child, and she had the child, I didn't do anything. But we have our first son, Alexander, and so we have not been able to get out a whole lot. But there's plenty of places. You know, if you're thinking about, pizza, food, steaks, you know, there's a lot of the chains that you know, the Texas Roadhouses, the Longhorn Steakhouses. You know, Maxwell's is a good steak place. So is Mezzaluna downtown. There's a nice downtown scene here in Fargo. There really is. And maybe a little bit underrated and maybe a little underappreciated as well. Herd and Horns is a good sports bar right by campus, walking distance to the Fargo Dome. They've been a lot of fun to work with here. And obviously you got places like Buffalo Wild Wings where you can grab wings and a beer and hang out. But pizza-wise, you know, Rhombus Guys is one up here. Sammy's downtown. You know, Ryan Peralta, our SID, would hit me if I didn't mention Sammy's Pizza downtown. So, there's a lot of different options up here, and certainly a lot of fun places. Plenty of bars. You'll definitely find a place to have a beer. I can promise you that in Fargo.
Well, sounds like people have plenty of options to get well fed prior to the start of the game. Jeff, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate the conversation. Have an excellent week, and good luck the rest of the way as well.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you having me on.
Final road trip of the season for South Dakota football as the Coyotes head to Fargo to take on North Dakota State. And here to help us preview the matchup, we bring in the voice of the Coyotes, Joe Van Gore. Joe, first of all, welcome back from Hawaii. A little darker than maybe when you left to spend some time on the beach of Honolulu.
Well, let's just say that there were a couple mitigating circumstances with that, mainly coral on the rocks and seeing a fisherman catch a big snake out of the water. But, we really suffered in Hawaii, but a great road trip for the Coyote men to start the season.
Yeah, so you returned from Honolulu to go to Fargo, which is similar in temperature and scenery, I'm sure, but nonetheless, Coyote football coming off of a big win over Youngstown State, needing that momentum, snapping a three-game skid, going into play the number one team of the country, and the Bison just look like they have for years another really solid football team.
And, you know, you don't find a lot of names that, pop off the list. Obviously, they have preseason Valley picks. They've got preseason All-American on the Stats FCS and the Athlon and other All-America watch lists. But, you don't see names pop off the sheet offensively and defensively like you have in the past, say like an Easton Stick or a Carson Wentz. I mean, you know, their quarterback, Lance is having a great year because he is not turning the football over. The Bison have low turnovers. The big thing with them is they get you off the field, they stay on the field. Noticing that their third down conversions are 52%. while holding opponents to 31%. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. And if you talk to coaches year in and year out about the Bison, that's the one thing that they talk about, trying to get them off the field, and you can't, and staying on the field yourselves, where the Bison have. And reading their notes, one out of their five plays is an explosive play or a big play, and that's certainly a concern. And even special teams, they have the best, at least if not the best, one of the best return games in the FCS, and that's been a concern at times. With the Coyotes, you look back at the Houston Baptist game, but of course that was a few games ago.
When you look at North Dakota State and you talk about them staying on the field, one of the reasons they can do that is they average nearly 300 yards on the ground. Again, it's that offensive line that we've known for a long time with North Dakota State. They keep plugging in good offensive line, and they find a way to run the football very well.
They do. It's something that, you've got to account for that. Averaging, 483 yards total offense, and 294 rushing and 188 passing. I mean, that's not exactly the balance, but that's what they're known for, and that's something that the Coyote front seven is going to really have to contend with.
Something that hurt the Coyotes in a couple of games that North Dakota State is really, really good at is points off of turnovers. Obviously, they don't turn the ball over, but they get the football from the opponent, and then they find a way to score it or turn it into points. Obviously, that's going to be a huge key for this game for South Dakota.
Well, I know things got really tightened up as far as ball security against Youngstown State. But, yeah, you look at North Dakota State, they have 68 points off of turnovers. So, yeah, ball security is just going to be just ultra important, and also limiting penalties. Although on the other side, Coach Matt Entz of North Dakota State tells me they need to clean up a little bit. They had a few too many penalties against Western Illinois, but of course they won big. So obviously there's a trade-off with that, but it's the same old story, and especially in the last few games for the Coyotes, turnovers and penalties.
When you look at the Coyotes, Joe, one of the things that's been very good the last few weeks has been the rushing attack, and Kai Henry's run for over 100 yards in each of the last three games, which has not happened for a USD running back since 2007. Last week, two 100-yard rushers. Says a lot about what they do, but it says a lot about the growth on the offensive line.
Yeah, the Hippos are doing the job. I mean, they've been coached up well by Coach Prevost and Coach Nielsen as well. And I know that the Bison will try like heck. I mean, if the Coyotes have their run game stymied, obviously that makes you one-dimensional, and that, puts a lot of pressure then on Austin Simmons to make plays in the passing game. Obviously, there's a lot of options for the Coyotes in the pass game as well as, the run game as well. But the Coyotes have to establish the run and also balance that with the pass against a good defense on Saturday.
I know you've made a few trips to Fargo and the Fargo Dome. It's just an incredible atmosphere with the number of people they pack in there and how loud it can get. I'm sure the Coyotes are preparing for that this week with noise inside their own building to try to prepare that. But as you look at that atmosphere, one of the best, I think, in college football, what's been your takeaway from the atmosphere in the Fargo Dome?
Well, they obviously Bison football is the thing. It has been since, they won their first FCS championship. After they won a bunch of Division II championships in the 80s and the 90s, Bison football kind of dropped off. But with Craig Bohl and, establishing that championship atmosphere, which is great for recruiting. I mean, you bring a recruit in, and he said, look, we've got 19,000 people in this place every game. They are wearing green and gold, and they are loud, which, is a definite 12th man for them. this Saturday. It seems like either we catch the Bison on homecoming or on senior day, and it's senior day Saturday there. So, you know, not only will you find the, you know, the usual crowd that you find at the Fargo Dome, but it'll be an emotional time. I think the Bison have 14 seniors that they're going to honor before the game. I mean, senior day games are awful emotional, and, you know, and I'm sure Coach Entz will try to play off that emotion and, you know, really try to get the Bison going for Saturday.
Bison are number one in the country. They are undefeated at 10-0. The Coyotes are 4-6, 3-3 in the Valley, coming off of a win over Youngstown State. They're playing the spoiler role here the rest of the way. Joe, ultimately, what's it take for this Coyote team to give itself an opportunity in Fargo?
Well, I think a lot of momentum. You know, when you handle Youngstown State like they did last Saturday, you've got a lot of momentum going up there. They are going to have to bring the energy. They are going to have to bring a lot of energy because you know the Bison will be doing that. They'll be looking to put away the Coyotes right away, and they have the capability to do that. But the Coyotes have to match that energy. They have to maybe, you know, step it up a little bit more. I mean, two games left in the season, you know, for the 10 seniors on the team, you know, nothing to lose, a lot to gain. A lot of momentum, you know, not only going into the last game of the year with South Dakota State, but that you competed and stood right up to the best that probably now ever was in FCS football.
I look forward to it. See how it turns out on Saturday. Joe, safe travels to Fargo and enjoy the game. Hopefully you can bring back another victory.
All right. Thanks, John.
Before we wrap up the show this week, let's take a look at upcoming events in Coyote Athletics. Friday, cross-country runs at the NCAA Midwest Regional in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Volleyball is at Western Illinois, and the Coyote men's basketball team hosts Texas Southern in the home opener at 7 o'clock. Saturday, women's basketball is at Utah. Football heads to Fargo to take on the Bison, and triathlon competes at the USA Triathlon Collegiate National Championship in Tempe, Arizona. Sunday volleyball wraps up the regular season at Purdue Fort Wayne. Monday men's basketball is back at home against SIUE, tip off at 7 o'clock. That's this week in Coyote Athletics. Catch a game, match, or meet soon. That's going to do it for us this week on Yotecast. Thanks for taking time to listen. Please subscribe and give us a rating. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback by emailing yotecast@usd.edu. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again soon. Go Yotes!
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Coyote Sports Network.